Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This week's Lore Watch comes with a spoiler warning. In our interview with Madeline Rue, we will be talking about the upcoming novel, Shadows Rising, which, if you're listening to this on Patreon, releases today. So please be aware that there will be mild spoilers ahead. And as always, thank you. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore in the games of Blizzard Entertainment. I'm your host, Joe Perez, and with me, as always, is my wonderful co-host and phenomenal sidekick, Matt Rossi. How you doing today, Matt?
Stop wasting time on me. Let's move on. Come on, let's go.
And of course, today, as promised, we have a very special guest with us today. Madeline Rue is with us, a wonderful author with of the Asylum series, the House of Furies, and of course, World of Warcraft, Shadowlands, Shadow Rising. How are you doing today?
Good. Excited to be here. Excited to talk about Warcraft, as always. I had like a little break in the podcast this weekend, so I have like more energy and fired up to talk about it.
Fantastic. So I guess we'll get started with, are you a fan of Warcraft before this? Were you a player? Or is this sort of your first foray into the universe? I know a lot of people are going to ask that question.
Oh, no, it's fair. It's fair. No, I've been a Warcraft player and lover since the RTS days. Oh, there goes my dog right on schedule. this is, the universe has been in my life for, going on 20 years now. So, I will say I've taken breaks now and again.
Oh, of course.
Life gets busy or whatever, but
written books. Of course you took breaks.
Yeah, right. It is a hard hobby to have when you work from home and, it's very easy to just get sucked into leveling yet another alt instead of going to work. So, it's on and off, for the last 15, 20 years. So I am, up until I got the job to write the Traveler series, I was just a fan myself.
Oh, wonderful. So I guess we'll start. I'll let Matt do his round of questions if he has anything specific he wants to ask you up first. So
I have one thing I was going to ask that jumped out at me when I was reading the book. There's a huge fan base for a specific character pairing and that you've given, I don't know what word to use here, fuel, an exploding bonfire, a crashed aircraft full of red engine,
wind in the sails of the ship.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that. I'd say it's very much canon now.
Let's get right to it. Flynn Fairwind and Matthias Shaw.
Yes.
How did they tell you to do that? Did you decide to do that? How did that happen? Because I was really happy to see it.
Yeah, that was very much part of the outline that I was given. It was that was Blizzard's choice, and I was all for it. And yeah, it was truly just such an honor to sort of put this first kind of big on-screen same-sex couple into the universe. And I know there's been a few like smaller ones that have made it into the game, but these are two pretty big tentpole characters, and
Flynn was making the fast expansion. Matthias has been around forever. I was really excited to read that when I finally got to it in your book.
Yeah, and you know, I think they're such a fun. I love writing odd couples or sort of unexpected couples. I think it's so much fun. Like obviously doing Lorthamar and Thalissa was great, but they are sort of like birds of a feather in a lot of ways. Where Flynn and Shaw have so many differences, and so it was fun and also a challenge, obviously, because there's points in the book where they're separated. So it was hard to sort of make this romance blossom while they're, first of all, very different people, but also separated at certain points. So it was a lot of fun, and it was really cool. They let me, you know, color in a lot of both of their backstories, and especially they gave me a lot of freedom with Flynn, and just getting to sort of give him more depth in terms of not just having him be a goofball all the time was really special. So yeah, I mean, I was geeking out. I was so excited when they told me that. And then throughout the book, I think, hopefully you picked up on, you know, there's quite a bit of queer representation all the way throughout.
Yes.
And that was intentional on my part because, you know, I knew this was coming. I knew we were putting this, you know, canon couple into the universe. And for me, it was important to kind of set the stage of like, okay, this is normal in this universe. This is just how it is. And just to sort of make it feel like it's like a regular aspect of daily life. It's, you know, like it doesn't have to be this big thing. So
yeah, one of the things that kind of disappointed me a few years back was when Star Wars said something to the effect of there's no such thing as queer people in our universe. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, that's not a great statement.
So when I saw it, I saw this pairing in your book, I was like, as somebody who is that kind of speaks to me, I was like really excited. So I wanted to make sure to address it up front because I was like really excited for it. And I thought, I really love, and we do a spoiler warning. People know that there are spoilers, but I'm not going to just throw all the details of the book out. I mean, that's what the book's for. Go read it.
Sure.
But I loved the bit at the very end when they reunite. And you just brilliantly encapsulate both of their personalities in how they act when they see each other again. And I really loved that. It was just such a, I didn't, no point did I think that this wasn't, that's exactly what Matthias Shaw would do. And absolutely how he would act in that situation. It's like, yeah, it's great to see you, but okay, you're king, my king, this.
Yeah.
We'll get back to that. You know, I really did, that was great. So I wanted to.
Yeah, thank you. That's so good to hear. I mean, obviously I'm nervous about reception, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of opinions about it. But, you know, one of the things I wanted to make sure happened was that, because this is sort of a shift and something new, I still wanted it to make sure it felt very much in character for both of them.
Oh, it totally does. You did an amazing job.
And that's one of the things, like, I know I mentioned this on social media the other day, and I stand by this statement. There are very few authors that I feel find a voice for characters or write in such a way, like in this particular circumstance, that feel natural or feel just like it's part of the world. And you really accomplish that here, where it, I've seen so many books where like it's shoehorned in or this, it just feels disingenuous. But like Matt's saying, like everything here feels normal. It feels right. It fits perfectly. I really appreciate that. I appreciate the fact that it doesn't feel like something somebody's just like, oh, just do this and you went and did it. It's no, it fits the characters. Which now you mentioned a little bit earlier, and I picked up on this, where they said they gave you a lot of leeway as far as filling in the backgrounds for the characters. Did they basically let you find the voice for those characters on your own, or did they give you a little more heavy guidelines regarding that?
I would say in terms of, you know, if you're talking about sort of their dialogue or their internal monologue, that was really my focus. You know, that was my job to really take that on. There were definitely times where, especially like, I think I have an easier time, and I'm sure this comes through, I think it's perhaps devastatingly obvious that writing Flynn is probably the most fun I had in the book, but he and I just get on like a house on fire. We're very similar in a lot of ways. I think, you know, with some of the more like high status character, like sort of like the night elf contingency, there were a lot of times where it was like, we're not sure they would use this specific word, you know what I mean? Like, then it becomes more of a talk and more of a compromise in terms of, you know, we really want to make sure we maintain this sort of this like elevated speech that they all have. Like, I tried to have Thalissa crack a few more jokes, and those were taken out. But I was like, oh, come on, she's funny. But yeah, no, it's with the backstory stuff again, it was sort of like, I think the way I approached it was, I knew we weren't going to have any like major, you know, events in this book that would make it impossible to understand Shadowlands going in. So when we had the outline finalized and they said, you know, go, it's time to write. At that point, I was like, okay, I'm going to take as many risks as I possibly can and push as far as I can, and then they can rein me back in. So, you know, I just kind of made decisions that I felt were right for the characters. And then if there was a disagreement on their end, then it became a conversation. But like with Flynn's backstory, with the stuff with his mom, like that was just, they were just like, this feels right, like done sort of thing. So
once you brought that up a little bit, I wanted to kind of go into it. For all that this is basically a lead-in to the next expansion, this book is not really about that so much as it's about relationships, I think. At least that's how I would say if I was writing a review of it.
Oh, I would agree, yeah.
It's the relationships from the various characters. Like, not just, you know, some of the like the big story moments, like the relationship between Bon Samedi and Talanji is a big part of it. How that goes from almost being, like, enforced on her to, by the end, she's sort of, I don't want to say renegotiated, but I don't know what the word you'd use.
I think that's right. I think she's, yeah. I think she's sort of taking control of her destiny a little more, you know, right. and making a more consenting decision.
And then there's the relationship between, you know, the various Horde leaders trying to figure out, how do we do this? We have no idea what we're doing. There's Flynn and Shaw. There's Anduin and himself, in a way, like trying to actually like lead his country and not knowing what, you know, he feels like he's got the pressure of everything on him to get it all done. Mm-hmm. And that's a big part of it, I thought. I really liked, there's a bit at the end with Taronda, who's one of my favorite characters, despite everybody getting mad at me.
Oh, me too. She's my fave.
Yeah. And I thought it was, you did an amazing job with not a lot of time to kind of encapsulate where she is right now. And what she's thinking, and I was really surprised to see Sarah Moon Warden even be in the book. I'll be upfront; I did not expect her to be a main character, mm-hmm. and much less to be. I don't know if you. I'd say she's. I'm not gonna say she's more important than Nathanos, but in a lot of ways, she's like the perfect foil for Nathanos, where she does not care, like she's not afraid of him at all, and yeah. There's nothing he could do to make her be afraid of him. Mm-hmm. And for all his, you know, he's got that relationship with Sylvanas, which is so important to him. And you do an amazing thing with it by the end of the book, where he has to go to Sylvanas in a bad position. He's not. Yeah. And that's a big part of it, too. So when you were writing it, is that how you approach it? Do you, like, start off thinking, okay, what are the character relationships? Where am I going to, like, because that's where the heart of the story really seems to come from, is these characters and how they interrelate and how they relate to each other. It's like, is that what you were starting off with, or like, where were you going with this?
You know, it's hard because you are given such a specific list of events and even, you know, the order to some extent. So for me, then the fun is in finding, okay, well, where's the real juice in this? Like, where's the real meat? And for me, it did come down to relationships, and it does come down to, how do I make these kind of larger than life characters feel more realistic and more well-rounded, and not just flawed, but, you know, they all have internal motivations, they all have agendas. And I really wanted to dig down into the sort of Nathanos and Syrah thing, because again, there's a lot of odd couples in this book. I think, you know, their relationship is really weird and really strange, because my personal reading of Nathanos, and this may be controversial, but this is how I see it, is that, you know, he and Sylvanas are like trauma bonded in a lot of ways, and he is more loyal to her than he is to the mission. So he is always going to put her needs and her commands ahead of everything else, where Syrah is not in that position, right? She could kind of like, she's not as interested. So we had to find a way to like make her make sense in terms of, why is she even doing this? Why is she even still going?
You did an amazing job with that, by the way. There's a particular passage where you have Sarah say something to the effect of, when Thanos is like saying, you messed this up, and she's saying something like, I don't care. All I care about is, you know, inflicting enough pain to make it bearable.
Yeah, so, she's really in this transition of, you know, she's still coming to terms with this new body she's in, this new brain she's in, and you know, she's sort of lashing out in every direction because it's the only thing that sort of quiets her mind for a little while. And, you know, I think when we were having conversations, a lot of it was like, you know, she's following this path and she's serving these people right now because it allows her to do the most amount of carnage and create the most amount of mayhem, because that's the only thing that makes her feel anything right now. And so, yeah, so they, while they're, well, her and Thanos are working together, it's not an easy partnership by any means. And I think by the end of the book, you really see, I wouldn't say she's necessarily questioning. I don't think she's ever really had a loyalty once she, you know, transitioned. So, yeah, it was an interesting challenge because we didn't want to give her, like, her motivations are so complex in a weird way, but then also so simple in that right now at this minute, the only thing that she can really do is just lash out, because at least that makes her like feel something.
No, you did a really amazing job with it, especially the very end scene of her in front of Tyrande.
That might be one of my favorite sequences in the book. Just her, just getting her and Tyrande in a room was kind of a dream. So
I was gonna say, the not only that, but like that entire final scene and it hit me really hard, just because I'm sitting there reading it and it's like, here's two essentially broken people, you know, being forced to sort of come to terms with their new realities, not just Sierra Moon, but also Tyrande. Like, that's another key moment there. And then you have, you know, her lieutenants come in and sort of I'm trying to think of the right word for it. It's, they don't smooth it over, but they give perspective that I think either of them didn't have before going into it. And it sort of changes how you view not just Sierra Moon Warner, but also Tyrande. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah. I think having those, you know, I think the function of sort of that chorus of Night Elf voices is to have a whole range of opinions, right? Because you have Tyrande who wants to do one thing, and then you have, you know, these two other voices that kind of represent varying opinions among the Night Elves. Because I think it's a mistake to sort of be like, all the Night Elves are in agreement, like, this is the way to fix things, right? So I think it was important to kind of have that range of opinions and not just be like, everyone agrees with Tyrande, whatever she says goes. And I think having those relationships that kind of recognize how broken she is in that moment is really crucial.
You did like an amazing job too. And I'm not going to belabor that this scene because there's a whole book to read, guys. but the Maiev contribution to that conversation, when Maiev shadows on, you know, is telling you, you know, you used to be better than this. It's like, you're saying I shouldn't be vengeful right now. And I was just like, it was perfect. I honestly thought that was like one of the best turns of a character. And not a turn. She didn't become somebody else, but it's a really nice introspective moment for a character who has not had a lot of introspective moments in the past few years. Yeah. So yeah, I really, that's why I'm harping on it now. And I apologize if I'm, you know, fangushing.
It's one of my favorite scenes. It honestly is one of my favorite sequences. Even just some of the lines that I got to do for Tyrande that I felt, you know, really strongly about and really proud of. And I think Maiev, you know, coming to this realization of like how much her life has been about anger and vengeance, and sort of being like I think there's a little bit of reflection happening for her there, right? Like, she doesn't get a huge arc in this book by any stretch, but I think, you know, whenever you can see yourself reflected in another person's behavior, it really can trigger a revelation in a sense. And so I think when she sees Tyrande, like how much she's changed, how far she's come from this person she used to be, I think it's really affecting for both of them.
Another set of characters that I really appreciated your characterization for was Illyria and Tyrallian. And mostly,
so messy.
That's it, right? Like, so we've been talking, this is something Matt and I have been talking about for months at this point, where, you know, the void is one thing, the light is another thing, but there's not always this cut and dry good and bad. And seeing Trelian willing to participate in questionable acts because it's serving a greater good, it's like this wonderful encapsulation of how somebody who wields the light for justice justifies their actions and continues on. And we've been talking about it, and we haven't really had a scene like that recently that I can think of. And just seeing how he's complicit in that, complicit in what happens, and sort of, if it goes too far, I can stop it. But can he really? And you have all these questions, these doubts, and it puts new light on the dynamic of those two, and what potentially could happen in the future with them. They were incredibly well characterized and well written. I really love them. That horror on Jaina's face when she realizes what they're doing, sees what they're doing. Like, it is just this wonderful moment of, yeah, okay, they're not always just pure, squeaky, clean, good guys. And I really love that.
I think a theme that emerged that I didn't really expect to see emerge is sort of like questioning hero worship. And I think that's laced all throughout this, not just because we're in the minds of some of these, like, you know, heroic, epic, larger-than-life people, and you kind of see them question, have their own questions and their own flaws, but you know, their statues are in front of Stormwind. They're kind of feel like these untouchable pillars of whatever, you know, legend. And I think having someone like Jaina come in and be like, oh, I thought it was one way, turns out it's another, and that maybe your past deeds aren't necessarily enough to justify always getting your way, sort of. And that was like a very specific part of the book that Blizzard was interested in having me explore, is sort of not just the nature of Illyria and Trelian's relationship, but the nature of what it means when the people who are on two sides, you know, the void and the light, like, what does it look like sort of if they're working together and not necessarily in a good way. And, you know, and I think too, I think there'll be a lot of people who read the book and are like, well, it's totally justified, right? Like, the mission needs to get done. Sylvanas is at large. Like, this is totally justified. And then I think you'll have people who are like, uh-oh, this is bad, you know? So, and I think it's meant to be read, you know, I think it's meant to be interpreted however you would like it to be interpreted. But, and I think too, some of the even more interesting stuff to me was, okay, so they're doing that, right? And then Jaina, obviously Anduin finds out about it. And I think his reaction is also really interesting.
Oh, that absolutely.
That was a fun part to do.
Now, speaking of Anduin too, like, we've seen Anduin grow up over the course of, you know, our entire time in the game world and over several novels. But one of the things that I think gets lost a lot is the fact that he is also, again, human. He's not perfect. And you see that here as well.
He's
very much a child. Yeah, exactly. He's a child playing at being king. And like that scene, the whole thing where he disappears and goes out to the bar, and, you know, he's got boot shine in his hair and mud on his boots and his cloak pulled up tight, and comes up with the name Jarek. And that whole sequence, like, I know a lot of people will probably say, oh, that seems out of place here, but I disagree. I think it's perfect. I think it's this perfect encapsulation of, it was always a kid that got thrust into this role, and now he's dealing with the fact that the soldiers are talking about being willing to die for him. He has to deal with all the atrocities of everything that's happened, and everybody looks to him and this incredible amount of pressure. And I think it's relatable. It's especially now, like, it's entirely relatable, where sometimes you don't want to deal with all the responsibilities. You want that night at the pub. You want that get away and be a kid again, for even if it's for one night. And I think it was a very important, powerful sequence.
Thank you. I think that's actually my favorite chapter. There's two that are kind of tied. That one and the Shaw in prison chapter, I think, are my two favorites. But I think, you know, for me, one of the things I looked at when I was writing about Anduin, especially particularly that chapter, I was like, wow, this poor kid really doesn't have any friends his own age, does he? Like,
no, he never really has.
He's hanging out with, like, Gen and Trelian and, you know, like, all that, Jaina, like, all these people who are, like, much older than him. And
is much older than everybody else, except for, like, Trelian's 1,000 years old, technically.
Right, right. And yeah. So for me, it's sort of interesting to be like, well, what would happen to you if you just kind of didn't have a childhood in a lot of ways and then didn't really have peers that you could, you know, bounce ideas off of? Like, you know, yeah, during quarantine, I mean, how much are we all finding out how much we rely on our friends and those like nights where you're like, okay, let's just go on, sit on a patio and like have a few margaritas, right? And for me, it's like, that's his life all the time. Like, he is always in that state of, okay, I can never let my guard down. I can never let anyone see who I really am. I can never be vulnerable with anybody. And so to me, it felt like, you know, it just gets to a breaking point and occasionally he has to like vent it somehow. And yeah, so that was my interpretation. And yeah, I'm sure there'll be people who hate it, but yeah, I you know, I was pushing for like maybe like even edgier sort of ways for him to blow off steam, but I think this is, you know, a good compromise, and I stand behind that chapter.
You definitely put, you kept that going too towards the end. When you see Anduin at the end of the story, there's a moment where he alarms the, you know, Jaina, and I remember thinking, wow, okay, that's something going forward that Anduin hasn't had for a long time, like an actual edge to him.
Yeah, like, and he, I think, you know, he's fresh off of decking Rathian in the face, so you know, I was like, that's kind of like his starting point, right, in this book, and I think hopefully by the end it feels like that's carried through, and you see him kind of fraying at the edges in a lot of ways.
Now, another character that I thought was really well done and I thought fit really well as far as giving characterization specifically to Talanji was Apari.
Thank you.
So it was one of those dark horse things for me. Like, I was like, oh, you know, this is going to be the main villain, or this is going to be the one that's, you know, the architect of all this unrest. But when you start getting into the meat of her character and you start understanding, like, why she is how she is, what she's trying to do, where her mind space is, it starts to make a whole lot more sense. Like, I remember reading it at first and I'm like, okay, well, she's got a real bad leg. She's got an infection. She won't let anybody take it off. Well, why? That doesn't make any sense. Wouldn't she want to live longer in order to exact her revenge? And then you get further and further in and you start to really understand not only what she means as far as being a villain in the story, but to the Zandalari as a whole, and specifically to Talanji, and almost as if a representation of how Talanji has let herself sort of not see the forest for the trees, have lost track of, you know, her people for so long and didn't really have perspective. Apari is almost like the embodiment of that. And I don't know if I'm reading too far into that or if that was intentional.
No, that's you're dead on. You're right on. Yes! You got it. Yeah, no, she was fun. I mean, obviously who doesn't love the chance to invent a wild villain. but also, you know, I wanted to keep her really grounded and not, you know, mustache twirling and all that kind of stuff. And for me, you know, Talanji's vengeance is such a huge part of her life right now, where she's at. You know, it's even the source of all the tension with the Horde. So for me, it was natural to pick someone who's kind of, yeah, this symbol of all the things that have gone wrong kind of in Talanji's life, but give it to somebody else and see it from their perspective of like, well, yeah, your behavior really screwed me over too. You know, like, you're obsessed with getting revenge on Jaina. Like, how do you feel? I'm obsessed with coming after you, you know, for this perceived slight. You know what I mean? I don't want to, like, get into too much detail for spoilers, but even the source of that need for revenge is kind of, like, really sad in a way. It's, you know, it's not like Talanji, like, went out of her way to do something bad to this person. And so, to me, it's like, it's watching the way that just a simple mistake or a simple moment of weakness, like, that can engender this whole new chapter in someone's life, and suddenly all they are is consumed by their need to get revenge. And yeah, I mean, she was a lot of fun to do, and I hope people feel like she fits in the world and feel like she sort of can stand toe-to-toe with Nathanos and Syrah, because it just didn't feel like we needed a faction of the Zandalari as well, who kind of represented this sense of unhappiness and unrest that was growing on the continent.
Well, I'm going to jump in here because you mentioned her. She hasn't gotten talked about yet by us, and that feels like a shame. And you wrote an entire short story with her and Lorthamar. So, Thalissra. I really love the way you did Thalissra. I especially loved Thalissra at the end. when she is, I don't know exactly what word to use. I almost feel like she's gossiping with Talanji, but not quite, not quite. But it does, you do a really good job of showing a different side of Thalissa than we would have gotten from the game.
Or she in the feels game, like such a politician to me in a
yeah,
lot of ways.
In the game, we see her. Yeah.
Person.
Yeah, in the game we see her just when she's leading her revolution or when she's moving the Nightborne into the Horde. But here you get to see her as a political animal. So I don't know exactly what to ask you as much as like, how are you approaching her? What were you doing with her? Because I think what you did with her really worked, and I'd like to give you a chance to talk about it.
Thank you. You know, I wish I had more time with her in the book. I think, you know, that was a lot of the impetus for doing A Moment in Verse. Her and Lorthamar don't get a ton of screen time. But yeah, I mean, for me, when I look at someone like her, she's so poised and put together, and, you know, she's so much experience. And to me, when I see her trajectory and I see, you know, where we meet her initially in the game and then where she is now, like, my interpretation is of someone who's really like coming back, kind of getting their second wind, right? Like, like back where they belong. They're out now. They're out of, you know, this bubble they've been in for so long, and they can like enjoy the world, enjoy new experiences. Obviously, she's still politically minded, but to me, I just see her as sort of like thriving in a way. So I wanted to give her a chance to show that, to be like, no, I enjoy being out and about. I enjoy being part of this Horde Council experiment and leading from the front. And, you know, and I think, too, I'm sure she sees in Talanji like a lot of herself. I think, you know, she can see set this young new queen and how much pressure that is and how complicated it is. So, you know, I hope there's a sense kind of towards the end of her maybe like taking her under her wing, so to speak. I don't want her to be like condescending about it, but you know, recognize, like, game recognizes game, you know, right? So I think she's sort of seeing like, okay, like, she, you know, she made it through. This was another huge test, and, you know, she made it out alive, and maybe it's time for me to sort of, like, extend a hand and be like, hey, you're not alone. There are, you know, there's other female leadership here that, you know, we can maybe kind of, you know, like, let's get drinks sometime. You know, kind of, like, make those connections, make those network a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I hope that comes through. I hope like her sense of, I don't want to say it's like joyful, but like the sense of like, she's out in the world and she's, you know, doing what she wants and she's got her man. And I don't know, that was sort of where I saw her.
No, I really enjoyed, I like the short story as well. We're not really here to talk about it, but it's a really good short story. But I'm glad to see like characters who don't get a lot of time get some time, if that makes sense. So
yeah,
I'm going to then take the opportunity to jump on to another. You already said you basically, did they tell you, they told you what characters to use, or did you decide to use Zekon?
No, he was stipulated for sure. Yeah, that was part, you know, I was kind of given the, you know, here are the perspectives we'd like to have. We want to have, you know, Talanji, Thrall, Anduin, you know, like here are kind of the heavy hitters we'd like, and sort of a general order of how things would play out. But no, Zekon was definitely part of it from the beginning. And, you know, there were little times like I put in like, you know, Jaina's mom, like, you know, but I just like that felt right for the scene. So she would be there, you know, things like that. But yeah. And like with the Horde, like, you know, who comes where with certain people when they go on missions, like I kind of directed that a little bit with their permission, obviously. But no, Zekon was from the beginning was like, OK, we want him to have a bigger part. So, like, having him and Rokan in it as much as they're in it, that was definitely, like, stipulated, yeah.
But you're the one that came over with Rokan relentlessly tormenting Zekon in a brotherly way?
That is me. Yeah, that would be me.
That
I see him
brilliant.
As sort of a Papa figure. You know, Rokan's the pushing 50, I think, so.
Yeah, he's getting up there.
Yeah, he's getting up there. So I saw him as sort of, like, this sort of exasperated older mentor for Zekon, who is just a cinnamon bun through and through. And and it was great to have Zekon because he's sort of this just golden-hearted and a little naive, I mean becoming less naive obviously by the minute, but you know, I think he's fresh off of this trauma with Sourfang, and so he's spinning out a little bit, doesn't know where he's going to land, and now he's put in this position of, you know, power and responsibility. And you know, I think it's cool because you kind of have him, Anduin, and Talanji all of a similar age kind of approaching responsibility and leadership from different perspectives and different directions. But yeah, and I feel oh so bad about what happens to him. But
yeah, no, I mean, you know, yeah, okay. Again, not spoiling it, but yeah.
Yeah, he takes it on the chin.
There's a line in particular when you are introducing him to, it's near the end of the book after Zakan has been through the major trauma that he's going to be through. Mm-hmm. And he says something to the effect of someone's like, I'm usually very handsome. Yeah. Like, which I just thought was brilliant. It was like, you know, ordinarily I'm quite handsome or something like
he's
that.
Like under all this, like, yeah, I think he makes a little joke about his current state, but yeah, no, he was a lot of fun to work with. And, you know, and I felt very like nervous. Obviously, I think there's conflicted feelings about him kind of being this mean lord, but.
I'll be upfront with you. I did not like him before this book.
That is my mission. I was like,
that is an accurate statement for Matt.
One of my goals was to make the case for him. I was like, if I can, there's a few things in this book. I'm like, if I can get you on board with like these three things, then I've done my job. So.
Well, then there's a good example now to ask, what were those three things besides Sakan, since you covered that?
I think making the case for, like patience from the fandom of like, this is all, you're going to get your answers. This is all going to play out. We haven't forgotten the Night Elves. We haven't forgotten X, Y, you know, like, it's coming. You have to be patient. It's a long game here. So that was one thing I wanted to get across. Number two, I really wanted to obviously sell the new couple that we have. And just an openness in general to more queer identities in the universe. That was my second kind of goal. And then third, yeah, because Zakan up to this point hasn't had as much sort of like interiorness to him. I wanted to make sure I made the case for him as like a larger lore character.
No, I think you really did, just because partially because your story of him acknowledges how thoroughly out of his element he is. Like he was up on a wall. He saw a guy, he walked over and said, "Hey, aren't you?" And then this role, this life he is now living, which
yeah,
is
he's
not
us, right? He's us in the game. He's like, you know, level one noob stumbling out of, you know, whatever, the first building that you spawn in, and suddenly he's hanging out with, you know, these legends. So for me, he kind of functions as this way in for us, the audience, who our level one character is now 120 and rubbing elbows and is the champion and all this other stuff. But back in the day, you know, who wasn't starstruck the first time they like rolled into Stormwind, and heard the music crest, mm-hmm. right? Like, I think he's like living that all the time. And, you know, and I love too getting to have him like see Zandalar and like, whoa, you know, like you would have heard all about this as a little baby troll. And now like, check it out. You are here in this golden pyramid. Like how swanky is that? So yeah, I liked having him be this sort of like more wholesome, naive kind of window into hanging out with these giants.
That's why I liked the Rokan relationship with him too, because Rokan feels much more like the guy who's been playing for years.
Yeah.
And someone else just started playing. So he's like, yeah, great. Like, it's really great that you're excited, but could you just focus up? Cause we got a quest to get, we got to get done.
Eyes up, right? Like you're in over your head, sir.
Yeah. So I really do want to compliment you on that. You did a great job with Zakan. I went into this book dreading reading an entire book with him in it. I was like, oh God, not this guy.
And I think people, it's interesting what I'm noticing is what people think the book is, or like who they think is the main character, kind of. And I think a lot of people are like, oh, Zakan is the main character. I'm like, not really. I mean, he's in it, right?
Oh,
like,
he's in it. Yeah, he's got a good chunk of it, but he's not. Yeah. No, he's not the lead. I don't even know.
He's not the lead, and I don't think anyone really is.
Yeah,
it's an ensemble cast. So.
Oddly enough, I'm almost willing to say Sylvanas is the lead, even though she barely appears.
Her presence
because,
is certainly
yeah.
felt throughout.
Like it's an entire book where a whole bunch of people are reacting to Sylvanas Windrunner, and you know, it drives what Anduin's doing. It drives what, obviously, what Tyrellion and Ilaria are doing. It drives what, you know, a lot of stuff that's going on. The whole deal with Juan Samdi, it's all very tied up in her, even though, again, she barely appears.
Yes. And yeah. That's too. Really... I think a lot of people think it's like Sylvanas on screen all the time in this book, and I'm like, eh, she'd be on the cover if that was the case. But yeah, no, she's definitely like, I think the ripples of her actions are felt in almost every chapter, and in almost everything that people do. So, yeah. Yeah, well, I'm so pleased you're at least neutral on Zakan now. That was absolutely
no, I straight up liked them.
Oh, good, okay.
By the end of the book, I actually straight up liked them.
Oh
I
my mean, god, it, that's so flattering. That's honestly, that's great.
It didn't hurt that he got very, very badly injured. So I felt a moment of yes, and then I was no, he's actually not that bad.
Right, and you know, and the way that it happens is so intentional on our part, because he's really saying like, okay, you know, if I'm going to be part of this war or whatever, if I'm going to be part of this faction, like there's going to be times where I have to lead from the front lines. And kind of the first time he tries to do that, he gets hurt, like just trying to be a good person, just trying to help, just, you know, sort of his nature determines the way that he gets hurt. And I will also say, just from playing the game, as soon as they told me I had to do stuff in Zandalar, I was like, someone's going to burn in a tar pit, because that's all I thought about when I was in Nazmir. As a player, I was like, oh, ooh, this spooks me out. What if, like, someone lights a match? We're in trouble. What is my mage going to do? She's fire. So, yeah, I think his fate was actually written far before I ever thought of that. But
now, another thing that I thought was really nice here was there was sort of a... I don't want to say like a life lesson, but there was definitely something here that I thought was very important. It was the interactions between Talanji and Bwamsamdi, specifically in the fact that Talanji is constantly asking him to see her father, because this is something that Bwamsamdi could easily do, right? This is something we've seen him do in the past. We've seen him bring in-game people up and we can talk to them. And it's this whole thing of, why won't Bwamsamdi do this for her throughout the entirety of the book? Here she is, this young queen, very much like Anduin, trying to figure out her way, inheriting this debt that she never agreed to, that she still has to pay, dealing with all this civil unrest, dealing with everything and having to grow beyond it. And you get to the big payoff at the end is, when she finally figures out who she is and what she needs to do, that's when Bwamsamdi says, okay, here's a couple minutes with your dad. And it was this wonderful moment of like, okay, now I can see where Talanji has grown up a little bit. She's learned a little bit. She's found her own path. And I thought it was interesting because it was sort of like this evolution point for her, but it also characterized Bwamsamdi in a way that I didn't think I really wanted to accept coming into this, which was he actually might care about things as opposed to just himself. So it was really, really nicely done there.
Yeah, we really, initially I really was pushing for him to actually be a POV character so we could like get in his mind. But I think in the end, this was the right choice, because I think just what he does tells you a lot about him. And it's not necessary to sort of get in his head, and it's cool to preserve the mystery, you know? So,
yeah.
Oh boy, puppies. Okay. So for me, you know, I think that's an accurate reading of what you're supposed to take away from this, because, you know, he's such a trickster. He's such a troll.
Literally. Yeah.
I was like, oh, rim shot. But, you know, I think when you realize what their bond also means, like just physically, like what the actual pact could mean for her, you know, we really had to make sure she goes on this journey with him so that by the end, when she's kind of quote unquote won and could get rid of this bargain, like she realizes, wait a minute, he's actually kind of been there for me more than I thought. And even just on a personal level, he's like intervened to, you know, she like when somebody bumps Zakan so that she doesn't get poisoned at the beginning of the book, like he's looking out for her in so many ways that it all kind of finally clicks for her, and she's like, well, how can we make this work so that I'm not entirely reliant on him, but I'm still acknowledging that he really has gone out of his way to like save me and save my reign, and then in a lot of ways save Sandalar, because oh, what a nightmare it would be if she also was dead. You know what I mean? Like, the power vacuum would just be incredible and could really mean some really scary, terrible stuff for Sandalar. So yeah, I think I hope by the end people's perception of Guan Xambi shifts a little bit to see that, like, he's not, his sole motivation isn't just to mess with people. Like, he certainly enjoys that, and that's sort of how he derives his power, right? He keeps everybody sort of on their toes and keeps them off balance, and he always knows, he's always, like, you know, a few steps ahead, but there is, like, genuine feelings inside of him too. He's not just this. I think sometimes when you have a pantheon of gods and they all kind of represent something, it's easy to just make them a caricature of that and be like, this is all they care about, is this one thing. But I think it was important to show that, no, he actually has, like, feelings and preferences, you know, that go beyond just being the god of death.
I think I want to go into that a little bit more, though, because you have a piece of dialogue here that I think is really appropriate. When they are doing their renegotiation phase, for lack of a better word, she says something like, the other Loa have to be represented. And he goes, well, I suppose I don't actually know anything about crops. And you can hear it. Like, you can actually hear it when you read it. Like, you can hear it in, like, in the tone of voice of the voice actor, who's an amazing voice actor and makes the character.
Oh, writing him was so easy, because yeah, you could just hear, you just knew right away if a line was, it didn't sound right.
But it's really well realized. And I wanted to bring this up because you mentioned you wrote the Traveler books.
Mm-hmm.
Joe and I have been paying a lot of attention to a character from the Traveler books, Wazala.
Mm-hmm.
And without going into spoilers for Shadowlands, because people didn't come here expecting me to dump spoilers about Shadowlands, I think it's fair to say that I don't want to say you created Wazala, because I think Wazala existed before the books, but you definitely made Wazala what he is.
Yeah.
No, I didn't write I didn't write the first two Traveler books. That was Greg Weisman. I only wrote the third one, in which Wazala does not appear.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's tough, because I think this is slight speculation. I think some of the stuff that maybe happened in the Traveler books did not necessarily line up with
what they're going to be doing.
Yes. And so I think there was a deliberate pivoting away from using him too much in the last Traveler book, because there were other things they wanted to establish him for. That's not to say that, like, all the speculation about whom was all, like, I've watched all the videos, right? I know what people are saying. Like, I'm not saying, like, all of that is wrong, not by any stretch of the imagination. He is a player, right, in Shadowlands. Like, that's just true. And he does come up in Shadows Rising, because
he does. Yep.
Yeah. So I think there's clarification a little bit on what his role might be in Shadowlands. But yeah, unfortunately, I didn't really have any control over him in Traveler. Yeah, the third book kind of, like, pivots away to just make one villain, sort of, just to simplify things.
But I think your characterization, at least, and it's almost like a throwaway line in Shadows Rising, I think is important, and it actually is something that we've talked about on the show a lot, is, you know, who is Moizala to Wam Samdi? And when Wam Samdi is talking about, you know, you'd be lucky that you're dealing with me as opposed to Moizala, he would eat you alive. There's this thing where it's like this palpable, I don't want to say, like, fear, but this is something that we've been speculating on, and that line sort of, like, feeds into that, where it's like, maybe Moizala is actually the boss.
Yeah, I think that's a correct reading. You know, that is that line is, any of the stuff with Guan Xambi talking about the other side, or, you know, the Maw, or anything like that, that was all very carefully done. That was, like, a Blizzard had a lot of input on how that got phrased, and like, on a word level, kind of making sure it was correct. So yeah, I think that's a correct interpretation of his fear of, like, you know, she blows him off because she doesn't know what he's talking about, but he is like, yeah, no, I'm not. That's not a joke, right? Like, he's mostly joking, but that is, like, one of the few times where he's,
well, clearly, he wants to be the Loa of Kings.
Yes.
Like, that's actually, like, he wants to continue to retain that position. It's important to him. He says as much. Mm-hmm. You know, he even says something effect of, you know, I'll still be the Loa of Kings. And she was like, yes, but you're going to have to, like, let me listen to other Loa. And then I thought that was, that's one of the reasons I brought up Mozzala, is I was actually hoping. See, now that I know you didn't write Mozzala, I all these questions I can't ask you because
and the thing is too, like, I think you know, it is very intentional to have Wan Zhang be in this book and to have him say the things he does, you know, like, I think a lot of the times when he's on screen, it's really setting up specific things for Shadowlands. And that line about Mozzala, like, you know, all of that is, like, it's interesting because I'm seeing people, like, take out certain lines and assign a lot of meaning to them, and they don't have a lot of meaning. And then, but things like that, like, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, if we're bringing up some of the heavy hitters that feel like they could factor into Shadowlands, yeah, I mean, that's definitely intentional. It's definitely there to, like, plant a seed or to set up something for a later reveal.
So, I'm trying to think of how to phrase this. With everything that you've done on this particular story, looking to the future, is there anything else that you'd like an opportunity to explore more if it was ever to come up? Or if, like, I know personally reading through this, like, and seeing some of your darker touches to the story, it made me hungry for a horror story based purely in this world at your hands, and to see what you could do with sort of, like, maybe let you loose in what happens in the Maw or something like that. Is there anything that while writing this jumped out to you, like, this is something I would love to spend more time with and craft more with?
I would love to get to do more with, like, the Night Elves and specifically Tyrande with where she's at, because I mean she's just kind of I just love this, like, kind of spookier side of her, which I hope comes out. And I don't know, that's interesting. I think, honestly, it's so funny because I think, you know, we're going to Shadowlands and I think there's going to be so many opportunities there, right, for, like, a great horror story. Even if they just let me do a short, you know, something short would be tons of fun. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting because there were so many parts of this book going in where I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to be good at that, or I don't know if I'm going to, like, be into this character. But by the end, I sort of loved all of it so much that now trying to tease something out that I would want to go further with is actually really difficult because...
Quickly, choose one of your children.
Right? Yeah, like, I bonded with all of these characters so deeply. I don't know. I do think it's kind of a split opinion because while it's super, super fun to get to work with some of these hyper established characters, like, you know, Thrall is in it a fair bit and he feels like someone we know really well, but it actually in some ways limits you with a lot with what you can do. Mm-hmm. So I kind of feel drawn to characters more like Flynn, where there's still sort of like a lot of these open doors to walk through and a lot more that you can kind of, more creativity you can have in a certain way. So yeah, I think my preference is sort of for writing those medium established characters, you know, or someone like Zakan, where you're like, oh, I have an opportunity here to really, like, make people fall in love with him. Whereas I think you kind of like Nathanos or you don't. I don't know if I move the needle on that, you know. Well, and you're a good person to ask, because I mean I did try my best to sort of, you know, at least let you see all sides of him.
Oh, I fully felt like he was a fully realized character whose guts I hated.
Sure, okay.
Yeah, no, I.
Fair enough. No,
you did
good.
You did an amazing job of actually making me, like, feel like, okay, I didn't feel bad for him at the end, but I knew he was hurt.
Yeah.
Like, I knew that hurt him more than anything else would hurt him. One thing of the dismissal of it, and again, I don't want to get into too much of spoiler territory here, sure, but feeling dismissed by her. It's, to him, that's worse than, like, I could destroy everything else and he wouldn't care. Mm-hmm. But making him go through that, that's pain for him. To feel like, you know, she just goes, well, you're still here, almost. Mm-hmm. Like, she almost gives him that, and that's like death to him. And he's like, I'll wait for you. And she's like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, that was fun to write. That was, I think I pushed that a little bit. I was like, I'm very allergic to trying to do things like everything will be status quo at the end of this book, right? Like, I don't want that. Emotionally, at least, I want things to sort of be in flux. But
absolutely, that's to the heart of that character. Is
agreed.
That literally everything else has been sacrificed already. There's only one thing for him to lose.
And what I was saying before about it, where it's like he's loyal to her, he's not necessarily loyal to the bigger picture of what she's doing. So to have done all these things and to have sort of made these decisions all in the name of this one thing, and then to realize like how expendable you are to a certain degree, is a lot. That's a lot to take on. So
really, yeah. You did it perfectly. It's extremely well done. But literally nothing will ever make me like Nathanos Maris. Sorry.
That's totally fine. I've always been kind of an Nathanos fan. So, but you know, and what's interesting too is like there are a lot of characters in this book. I'm totally not answering your question that you asked, by the way. I'm sorry, but there are a lot of characters in this book that I came in liking a lot, and I was trying to be super careful about not letting my own personal bias for them like come through. I mean, not in a way that is a disservice to the story, right? I think like loving getting to write Flynn Fairwind is like not a problem to the story, but you know, I like Nathanos, but I don't like, my job isn't to make him like woo-woo, like sympathetic, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to have my personal interest in him as a character sort of change what's true about him or change the, you know what I mean? I still want him to feel very realistic and very true to who he is.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like
I personally find him, you know, interesting.
It doesn't read like you were writing, you know, here's my 300 page Nathanos fanfic. No, absolutely.
Right.
Not.
He's not a Mary. I don't want him to be like a Gary Stu or something. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, but I feel very conscious of that because like there are some of these characters that I am a huge fangirl for. So it's, you have to like rein it in and be like, okay, but what would they really do? What would they really do?
Oh, you did an amazing job with Nathanos as the, I don't want to say villain because he's not the, there's, it, again, I think it is very much Sylvanas is the one behind the scenes on stuff.
I mean, he's chief peon number three.
But he's doing a great job. You do a great job with giving that character. Like the frustration he feels at one point is so palpable. Like he's being faced by the trolls he's allied with. They're looking down at him, literally physically looking down at him because they're so much bigger than he is. And he's standing in the middle of all of them trying to get this thing to work. And Cira is like, you know, giving attitude. And you can just feel it in waves coming off of him. That his preference would be just to kill everybody there.
Yes. Yeah. And to be, you know, I think it's funny because he keeps trying to sell Cira on the mission, right? He's like, mm-hmm. Oh, this is really crucial. We really have to do this. Like, you got to see the bigger picture here. But while I think, deep down inside, he 100% agrees and is like, I wish we could just be, I could just be with Sylvanas, right? Like, he is so always, like, they're so often separated from each other, even though, you know, like, he's kind of the right-hand guy, but he's so often not physically near her. And to me, that would be, like, awful, right? That's devastating. If you love someone, like, you want to be in physical proximity to them, so... That was something I was trying to be cognizant of too. It's like, yet again, she's off doing something and he's like, you know, gotta go do the dirty work.
It's been like, what, three expansions of this now?
Yeah, and the sense of like, oh Jesus Christ, like, can I can I just be there with you, even on a sense of like a protective sense. It's like, yeah, obviously she can handle herself, I'm not saying otherwise, but
you still want to protect somebody even if they believe they can take care of themselves,
right? You still have this sense of like, I should be there with you, I should, you know, what if something goes wrong? So yeah, I think that was a little bug in the back of his head at all points, at least when I was thinking about him, because that would annoy me. So I don't know, I think he would probably be very fed up with it, and then to have it play out how it does in the very end, you know, it's pretty devastating. So
I think we've covered just about everything from the book that I can really think of. Matt, do you have anything else you want to ask?
Well, we do actually have to stop the podcast at some point. I mean, I could,
yeah,
we could sit here.
We could be here all day.
But
you guys are the first people I've talked to who have read it. So I am like, if you want to go for 6 hours, like, no, because I'm so like, you know, it's so hard to talk about it without spoilers, especially the, like, a lot of people don't even know that Flynn Fairwind is in it at all, period.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. He's not, I didn't know he was in it until I saw
not advertised at all. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And same with, like, you know, I guess like Tyrande, I guess you could assume she's in it, but like people don't know that some of these people are in it. And so when I'm getting questions like, well, who is your favorite person to write? I'm like, I can't say because I can't spoil that Flynn is in this, but I think it's quite clear that I have.
You did like I, my life writing. I'm going to say this. I know I talked about them already. One of the things I really liked about the Flynn Matthias relationship is not just how their personalities are disparate, but how that works. Like they feel like they connect on the level of, like, almost like cogwheels, like where they, this guy has points, this guy has spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and
yes.
And I remember I was describing it briefly to my wife. She was asking me, like, you know, what are you reading? And I was like, I'm reading this, it's for work. And she's like, well, you know, what's going on? And I tried to give it a preface, and I was like, yeah, and of course, you know, my favorite gay pirate is in fact gay. And that's, you know, she's like, yeah. Really? You kept saying that guy was gay. I'm like, yeah, no, he is. And I'm totally right. I don't know if he's gay or he can be bisexual. I don't know. I'm bisexual.
Sure.
But I liked there's like a moment where I think it just distills out like this perfect. Oh, see, I'm kind of rambling here because I liked it so much and I don't know how to put it into words, but it was almost like watching like Indiana Jones and James Bond go on a date.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, right. Yeah. 100%.
And but I don't have a question about it. I'm just wanted to go.
No, honestly, it was so much fun to do. And, like, you know, and just, again, trying to sort of, like, Shaw has been in this game since minute one, right? If you're Alliance side, especially humans, you meet him so early on. And so for me, I really had to be like, he feels like one of those characters who has a lot of walls, right? Like, he's really kind of stoic and he has his job and he is his job. And that's kind of how I saw the two of them, is that because of their childhood, because of traumas that they kind of share in a way, they were both put on these paths. And this book is them questioning, like, okay, is this path correct? If it's correct, is it making me happy? And if I'm not happy, what would make me happy, right? And that's sort of like the point that I both saw them headed towards, and why this moment, this time, is when it can happen. And yeah, I mean, they are love an odd couple, and they are so, like, I just love having Shaw just like rib him mercilessly about everything. And then, but like, Flynn's not defenseless, right? He can kind of like poke under the armor in his own way. And
yeah, there's respect there.
Yeah, there's respect, but there's also like a mutual sort of like exasperated sense of humor about the other. And, you know, I'm sure it's initially when Shaw was assigned to work with him, he was just like dreading it, like, oh my God, can you even, like, this guy really? But, you know, I think Flynn also is like a competent captain, and you see him at work, he is good at what he does. And that's always attractive, right? When you see someone like kind of at their best. But yeah, I don't know. I really just have such a soft spot for them, and it's really exciting. I'm really jazzed for all the fan art. That's good. I hope.
Yeah.
The two things I really want to see are them, obviously. But if we don't get some Jarek fan art, I might quit writing and go into farming or something. I don't know.
Folks at home, you heard it. This is a request. I know plenty of you artists listen to us. Now's your time.
Yeah, I think,
quite frankly, Jarek is going to have plenty of fan art because people are immediately already coming up with ways Rathian can be involved in this. So,
of course, yeah, No, I think too. So maybe my proudest achievement. I almost got the F word in here. I don't know if people notice it, but I think it's Flynn or Shaw. I can't remember. I think it's Flynn is about to say drop the F bomb and gets cut off, and then I think I have the one and only S word in WoW books, and maybe in the WoW universe. I'm not sure. So those are the things I'm proud of. Can you let Maddie swear? That's what I want to know. But, you know, and too, like, I know this is going to sound so trite, but like the fact that it's Anduin swearing, to me, is actually a big deal. Like, that's not me just being funny and just doing it just to do it. it is intent. Like, I did think about it, and to me, I think it is actually important that someone that we sort of see as this golden retriever of the Alliance. Like, I think all those little things are adding up to show just how much pressure he's under at this point.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But well, honestly, this is such a joy to like actually be able to talk details. I'm so relieved you liked Zakan because that keeps me up at night. So.
No, you did it. You successfully got me to like Zakan, yes, a character whom I would have been cheerful to see get stomped into the ground with the hobnailed boots, and you made it so I felt bad when he got hurt.
And the other side of the coin, I've hated Matthias Shaw for years. You actually made me like him and like feel for him.
Oh my god. Actually just got like my hair has just went up on my arms. I'm not kidding. I'm not being dramatic. Like, this whole podcast, I've wanted to start crying because I really do feel so strongly about this book, and I'm so excited, but also obviously so petrified with how people will respond. So honestly, thank you. It means so much to hear that you like the aspects of it.
Well, you're very welcome, and thank you for writing it, honestly. And this is something we talk about a lot of the books. We talk a lot about the story of the game and everything else. We're very hypercritical about a lot of that stuff, and we're very quick to, as much as we love things, we're very quick to point out things we don't like. I have a very hard time looking at things in your book that I don't like. You did a very good job, I think. It's different than a lot of the other WoW books too. And for those of you that are listening at home, if you've made it this far, I really encourage you to read it, because a lot of the other WoW books, while they focus on different people, they don't have as much going on from as many different perspectives at one time as this one does. And your balance in it, your presentation in it, really makes it flow, so well. I'm a quick reader, but I literally sat down with your book, and the next thing I knew, my entire day had gone by because I had read the entire thing cover to cover. And this is with me stopping to make notes and highlights and everything else. That's rare for me to get absorbed into something like that. So you did a fantastic job with that. And it also made me very eager to pick up several of your other books that are currently sitting around my house.
Oh, thank you. Oh my gosh, that's so exciting. Yeah, I hope they have me back, because honestly, this is probably the book I wrote the fastest in my entire life. I think I wrote it in a month. It was just such a joy. It made me so happy to work on that. I was like, just so jazzed to sit down to work every day. And I do love this world so much and these characters so much that it was like, you know, obviously they paid me, but I was like, yeah, can I pay you to keep doing this? This is like the most fun I've ever had. So I really sincerely hope that people love it and that I get to come back, because I had a great time, and it really just, I don't know. It was just such a cool bucket list kind of thing. I'm such a huge fan of this world, and to get to have any tiny, tiny mark on it has just been the coolest experience of my life.
Well, I guess with that, we should probably start bringing this to a close. Before I do our final outro, I'm going to throw it over to you, Madeline. Is there anything you want to say to our listeners out there? Anything you want to push besides, obviously, this book? Where can they find you? What other works can they find you in? Lay it out there.
Sure. So, obviously, I hope you get Shadows Rising. I hope you love it. I had the most fun ever doing it. If you like the Traveler books, I did the third one, or just go pick those up. They're great. They're really fun little adventure. I also have two young adult series out there. I have Asylum and House of Furies. So if you're into either kind of straight horror stuff, I'd go do, not that it's like, there's queer people in it. That's not what I mean.
No, pure horror.
The straight people.
The straights are at it again. No, I would say if you like sort of, you know, American Horror Story, I would go with Asylum. If you like more sort of Crimson Peak, House of Furies is very much in that vein. I have an adult sci-fi range that started last year. Salvaged is the first book. The second book, which is, they're all standalones in the same sci-fi universe. The second one should be out next year. I have another young adult book coming out next year. And yeah, I wrote for Star Wars. So if you like Star Wars, I'm in From a Certain Point of View, the first edition. And oh my gosh. Oh, and then I'm on Twitter. You can find me there at AUTHOROUX. It's the same on Instagram. And I have a Facebook fan page as well. if you need to reach out to me, especially if you want to talk about something spoilery from the book, don't like publicly tweet it at me, at least not for the first week. I'm trying to preserve the experience for people. But I have an email address listed in my bio. So I'm usually very quick to respond.
Well, again, thank you very, very much for joining us. I encourage everybody out there to read this. And yeah, I want to hear other people's takes on this as far as what they love and what they their thoughts on it. But be constructive, folks. I don't.
I like that you caught yourself there. What they loved and what they loved slightly less.
Yeah, because there's always going to be somebody who hates the stuff. But I don't. I want to hear more the positive side of things.
Talk about how much the Phantos Menace sucks.
Yeah,
no, I'm totally fine with criticism. Like, trust me, I'm a woman on the internet. I can handle criticism.
Yeah.
It's more the like harassment / hatred.
Oh yeah, don't do that.
I'm sure there's typos. I'm sure I made mistakes. Like, I get it. But yeah, no, I'm totally fine with criticism as long as it's given in a
constructive
way. Yeah, I'll respect you if you respect me. That's how it goes.
But Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch. Your continued support means this podcast, site, and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your questions answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. So once again, thank you very, very much. And everybody, we'll see you next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.